Welcome to Feldman World
Talk Radio.
That's your world. I just live in it.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Hey, good evening, everybody, and welcome to Feldman World Review. This is Brian Irving, your host here at Feldman World Review. Thanking you for tuning in. It's like, information overload out there all the time. Find myself flipping between Fox and Newsmax. There's not that many places to go anymore. Sometimes Newsmax is running back-to-back documentaries, and you end up with Chris Wallace or some other person you'd rather not watch on Fox, but there is a lot going on. Ghislaine Maxwell, who is Epstein's partner, she's in custody, we're waiting to find out how that's going to blow up. Hopefully it does blow up and it doesn't turn into another ridiculous burying of the truth. Rumors are going around that Oprah Winfrey's in house arrest with a ankle bracelet or something with regards to, some kind of issues with trafficking and so forth. Who knows? Because the media is never going to be honest. So, everybody's digging, trying to climb behind it. But was that a fantastic July 3rd and July 4th from a president? I thought the Governor Noem of South Dakota, really incredibly impressive. I never heard her really speak before. Very impressive. I thought the whole thing at Mount Rushmore was just super well done. The music was corny. You had the Air Force and the Navy bands playing, no offense, but they were playing a lot of the straight up music, the original historical American music. And sometimes it seemed corny, but it was so refreshing not to have some Hollywood or, Billboard artist, doing some fancy dance to the same old beat that's been going on now for 30, 40 years. But, we'll see how it goes. But I just thought Trump's speeches were just excellent. Especially the one on the 3rd was just a spectacular speech. It was a spectacular, delivered well, and but wow. He's going to be in New Hampshire on July 11th. That got posted, so I'm sure the Antifa buses are loading up. Got to get there early, get a lot of extra, sharp cheddar and pancakes while they're there. So that's going to be coming up. But, how do you guys feel, about the mess? The mess we're in right now? Coronavirus, the Marxist revolution, 10% unemployment. And now we have the fear of violence. That at any given moment, somebody out of nowhere could just come and whack you over the head. A lot of growing socialist, national socialist, and fascist, groups are famous for that. Social isolation, intimidation. There was somebody on my Facebook page. She had put a thing up that her son. Actually, she was on Twitter. But she said that her son had to drop her, sent her a note, that he had to drop her as a friend on Facebook because of all the conspiracy theories and all the crazy things she's talking about. It's a pretty sad sign, but I find myself so angry and so sad. It's becoming, I can't think straight day after day. And, whether it's, they burned a flag in D.C. in front of the White House yesterday. Last night. It makes me so sad, but it makes me angry. Another Columbus statue bites the dust and is thrown into the water. One thing about this situation now is that the gun sales have been unbelievable. And, you know, but it's not just citizens buying guns to protect themselves at this point. Because in a lot of the states where you have open carry, you know, a lot of the Marxists are picking up their guns. They're taking advantage of our Second Amendment. And that's why, excuse me, too much coffee at once. you know, we need, you know, they're taking advantage of that Second Amendment. And, you know, they said they were a terrorist group, Antifa. But, you know, there's an insurrection going on. And whether whether it's the BLM, the Black Panthers, or all the different names, you know, they're doing what the Islamist jihadists do. You know, you have 10 different groups all with the same goal, same intent, cooperation, working together, sharing weapons and intelligence. And they got a million names, you know, Hamas, you know, Hezbollah, Islamic Jihad. You got Boko Haram in Nigeria. You've got Al-Shabaab in Kenya. You know, you got ISIS, Al-Qaeda. Come on. You got the Houthis. You got there's all these groups, and they're doing the same thing here. It's like, well, that wasn't really Black Lives Matter. That was these guys, or that wasn't really Antifa. That was these guys over here. So, you know, there's a lot of different names popping up while all this is going on. But the weapons are falling off the shelves. You know, and the thing that makes me the most angry is that there is no moral equivalence in this. There's no moral equivalence. There's one side that's doing violence, and there's another side that's trying to protect itself or trying to avoid the violence, you know, by finding common ground. But there's no common ground with this group, just like there's no common ground with the jihad, you know. And that's why they're natural allies together. But all this is just, it's so much heavy psyops, you know, to break it. You know, the Democrats seem to be all into it. They're all supporting it. Anything Black Lives Matter does, even if it's burn down a store or shoot a cop, it's okay because they're peacefully protesting, and it's their right to be out here protesting. You know, forget the fact that they're beating people up. I've watched, I'm an old man. But you know, I've seen old guys getting beat up, you know, 3-4-on-1, kicking some skinny kid down to the ground and stomping his head while he's on the ground. I mean, all the, you know, there's never no honor among thieves, I suppose. You know, but the, it's a psyop. They're trying to break the will of the people. You know, they're the Marxists, they're breaking us up into these groups, and I'm really sick of it. I'm sick of other people accepting it. But breaking us up into groups, separating we the people, basically. And, you know, I'm feeling angry. I'm feeling very angry. I mean, a video just came. I just saw this video a couple hours ago. It's posted on all my pages, Facebook. You go to Feldman World Group. Facebook, Feldman World Group, and Twitter, and or Parler. And, you know, you can see this video. And it's either Black Lives Matter or the Black Panthers. And it's a battalion, and they're marching in a military style. They're heavily armed. They're heavily armed. They're all dressed in black. They got the mask on, and they're calling out Americans for a fight. They're making a joke out of the poor boys, the motorcycle groups, the militias around the country, that they're ready. Here they are. They're going, here we are. I mean, are we heading for the Civil War again? You know? And the article that I saw, basically they were declaring war on Seattle. That, you know, even though they broke up the, you know, Chaz, some people call it a Chaz, some people call it a Chop, I call it a Chump. You know, I guess they broke it up. I guess they're threatening people, that people were threatening them. And I really don't think so. You know, I mean, just in terms of the population, the odds aren't so good. The odds aren't so good, but they're calling people out. You know, hence the fear. That couple with their house on that corner, there were 1,000 people outside of their house now yelling, and they had to hire security guards. There's people in Missouri, St. Louis. you know, they were threatening the house. They came out with guns. They're the ones that got charged, not the people that were trespassing, not the people running across their yard with carrying rifles and, you know, yelling racist threats and Marxist threats and Islamist threats at people. And this is really, you know, this is getting beyond frustrating. Because it seems like they want to call us out. It seems like they want to call us out. Like I said, based on the population, you know, are Americans, you know, where are we? I don't know. But have you found yourself the last few weeks, and I'm not just talking about from the lockdowns of coronavirus, but have you found yourself talking to yourself? Because I have. I have. Now, my wife keeps asking me frequently, who am I talking to? And I usually say myself. I'm talking to myself. I got some stupid line. I'm the only one that'll listen. Then I realized yesterday that every time I'm talking like that, I'm standing there talking. I'm not trying to scare anybody, but I'm talking to the enemy. It's always the enemy. You know, sometimes it could have been a boss that fired me. But right now, it's just this emotional fight. It's an emotional fight, not over the edge, but focused on this enemy. And I'm so frustrated that it can't, that I don't see the government supporting people. I don't see anybody coming out and, you know, doing anything. They've marginalized the police. You know, it's no wonder. You know, you can see it now. You can really see why the Democrats were so intent on getting into control of our greatest financial metropolises, whether it was New York or Chicago or Minneapolis or Seattle or Los Angeles, okay, New Orleans, Miami. Well, Miami's got a Republican. He's got a Republican mayor. Well, you guys know what I'm getting at. It's no wonder they control this. They wanted the money. And look at the impact they can have on commerce, on American commerce by by shutting down these cities. Look what they did to New York. Look what they did to Fifth Avenue. Look what they did in L.A. You know, Beverly Hills. It's like a war zone. It's like, it's like they're trying to turn us into these other low socialist revolutionary places where everything's in rubble. And no one has anything. People are eating out of dumpsters. That's what they're heading us for. That's what they're steering us for. You know, and I just think, I think how angry I am, how focused I am. You know, when I was a little kid, I begged my father to send me to military school. My dad was, you know, big in the military. He enlisted in the Navy. He was at World War II. He was at Midway. They got kamikaze. He came home. He went on the GI Bill. Got his Purple Heart. Came home on the GI Bill. Started going to college at San Francisco State, ended up getting an appointment to West Point. And, you know, the military thing, I wanted to be like my dad. I begged him. He wouldn't let me do it. He said he had to do it, that he did it because he had to, and that he wanted me to have a life where I didn't have to. But I wish I had. I wish he had. Because I know I have that energy for that. I would have. And yes, I feel guilty about it sometimes. Yes, I do. But, you know, I find myself talking to myself about, you know, all these crazy things that keep coming into my mind. You know, when you look around the world and you talk to and you listen to some of the foreign countries, they want Trump to come in and save them, whether it's an Islamist country or it's a communist country or it's a socialist country. Hong Kong. Hong Kong spent months walking around singing the national anthem, carrying the American flag, asking for Trump to come and save them. Because this is a worldwide war. This isn't just what's happening, you know, under the guise of social justice and racial equality. That's just the guise. That's just the emotional trigger to make the white people feel guilty or the Americans to feel guilty, because there's a lot of Americans that are conservative, that are Republicans, that believe in America, that serve this country in the military or serve this country in some other way, that aren't white. This whole idea that everything's broken into these two splits is totally wrong. It's just totally wrong. But these countries want Trump to come and save them. But I'm frustrated by the fact that domestically, we have governors and we have mayors looking the other way, thinking it's a big joke. The Seattle mayor, she paid dearly because, you know, after she was talking about the summer of love there in Chaz or Chump or whatever you want to call it, they ended up at her house complaining, protesting. And then all of a sudden she's interested in rounding them up and getting them out of town. But the Democrats, you know, they're really controlling a lot of what's going on, or at least they think they're going to control it, but, you know, come on. You know? And, you know, there's the whole thing with Israel, and there's this whole Islamist part of this whole movement. And I learned the truth about the Palestinian movement back in the late 70s. I did a lot of studying. I wrote a report. I wrote a thesis, and on I read, you know, but I don't have any more empathy. Because these people should have put their weapons down and made peace, period. Because there's no apartheid in Israel. There's no systemic racism in America. Not anymore. Maybe you could have looked at it when FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, when he resegregated Washington, D.C., when he became president. That was definitely an institutionalized racism being run by the president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, a Democrat. I'm sick of the lies about who people are and what this is all about. And unfortunately, because of the indoctrination in schools and colleges, we have millions of people that believe the Marxist propaganda because they were never taught history. You know, we were taught history and math and social sciences and regular sciences. And we were taught that we need to learn to think critically. And we would take the information and come to the conclusions and think critically ourselves. We weren't told who the winners and losers were. We weren't told, you know, in so many terms, you know, good guys and bad guys. You had to read the information and you had to use your critical thinking. There isn't any more critical thinking. Just the violence, just the hate, just the racism. That's all that you can see out there. Now, Americans' enemies are out. They're out there now. They're all over. They're in our Congress. They're in our judiciary. They're in our colleges. They're in our high schools. They're on TV. And they're selling us down the river for expediency because Amazon's still making money through the pandemic, through the riots, through the burning, through AOC ruining the opportunity to have a big Amazon facility in the Bronx to create all those jobs, even though she blew that, these people are still all in for getting Trump out, for this Marxist revolution, for continuing to patronize and virtue signal. And they think they're going to control this when it's all said and done after November 3rd, November 11th, these people are all going to go home and they're going to stop doing what they're doing. No, I don't think so. I don't think so. But, you know, my America, you know, there's my America that I know, the one that saved my family. Both sets of my grandparents came here after 1900 looking for freedom, religious freedom, cultural freedom from all different parts of Europe and Russia. There was nowhere else to go. There still isn't anywhere else to go. And this idea that this is some kind of hellhole here is completely wrong, the way they talk about it. It really makes me mad. I'm sure you guys saw all this crap also out there. But who is the enemy? Who is this enemy right now that's knocking down statues, that's spray painting subway quality graffiti? They can't even get a good artist, you know, to come in. If they're going to paint on the side of a monument, don't you think you should get somebody that has some visual arts training? You know, a painter, a designer, somebody, at least in the abstract, they could create something that's... But it just looks like... It looks like the back end of a subway station. Our monuments to our fallen. Our monuments to our heroes. Our monuments to the founding fathers. Our monuments to the people that gave birth to this nation. Where everybody's still coming here. This horrible, racist, nasty hole here. They don't stop coming by the millions. Although Trump did slow them down. Gotta say, the border's a little slower. But this enemy, it's been the same enemy for a century. It's been the same type of enemy for thousands of years. But this enemy is a Marxist-Islamist coalition. A coalition. And I remember back when I was watching the video coming out of Ferguson, you know, when Black Lives Matter was born on a lie about Michael Brown, you know, hands up, don't shoot. When the fact of the matter is he tackled the cop into his cruiser and tried to wrestle the gun from him. You don't do that to the police department, okay? And I know there's been issues, but the systemic racism, no. In the police department, no. 50% of the police departments in America are not white or more, depending on the area and the neighborhood. Oh, but they're just agents of... No, they're not. But this coalition's bent on disrupting and damaging America. Meanwhile, China, Iran, Russia, they make moves all over the world based on this apparent weakness. Okay, and the visuals of these rioters and this anti-American violence and the looting with no consequences. Shootings, stabbings, you know, tossing Molotov cocktails, burning flags, defacing, knocking down, or completely destroying monuments to our culture, to America. The one that we're supposed to be rallying around, we're being attacked. We're being attacked, fools. We're being attacked, regardless of who these persons were to an extent. Because none of us are perfect. Nobody is. Everybody's got their flaws. But only 1% were slave owners in America. 1%. Maybe even less than 1%. There were primarily Democrats, and there were primarily Democrats that owned farms, plantations. You know, plantation was just a word. But, you know, it means a lot to people. There was slavery in America. It was a mistake. But it was the Democrats that were fighting for it. It was the Democrats that founded the Ku Klux Klan. It was the Democrats. And I can't believe what they can say. And I'm going to go into some specifics and stuff in the media in a little bit. But all of this stuff that we see, the burning, the desecrating, this is classic Muslim Brotherhood, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and German Nazi techniques to split the solidarity of the people. And all of us, we the people, we're Americans. We're black, we're white, we're yellow, we're brown, we're red, and I hate this racial group crap. I hate it. And the colors. You know, we're human beings. We've all got different kinds of genetics. We all have different kinds of situations going on. You know, but America's under attack. There's nowhere else to go. Where do Americans go? Where do you go? If you can't be here. Or they want to turn this into a Marxist hellhole, right? Where they shut all conservative thought. They say conservatives are all racist. So they shut down all of our media. We're not allowed to do anything. And they control everything. A 30%, you know, a minority of the culture in control. This is frightening. It's frightening. But we're under attack, America. And even though the Democrat progressive socialists are supporting and financially supporting and through their media supporting, they believe they can control this after the election, but they won't be able to. This movement will come for them as well. They'll come for them. Because this isn't a fight for racial justice or improving relations between communities or creating a better union. This is a battle, a cultural battle for our lives right now. And people are going to, you know, Trump said it a couple times in the midst of the two speeches. You know, the patriots have to stand up. The patriots have to stand up and start to defend and get out there and defend and fight. And that's tonight's journal. But, you know, the information coming out, you know, you know, this coronavirus nightmare that we live through, are living through, that they don't want it to end. They love it. The left loves it. The progressives love this. This is the best kind of draconian control they could possibly have. They love it. They want to have that. They want to have those, you know, you get cleared as not having coronavirus, and then you have an ID card that allows you to leave your house. I mean, that's one way of getting around. You know, they want to destroy the Constitution. These are the ways they're trying to do it, because they know they can't just come out and say we're destroying the Constitution. So they're going to play all these games where you got to sign up, you got to get cleared to be in public again. But as was reported in the Washington Examiner, Miami-Dade County Mayor Carlos Jimenez said the massive protests that took place in Florida and elsewhere throughout the country likely contributed to the new spike in coronavirus cases. Now, that's not really news to my listeners and to myself. I mean, it's not news, but we were saying it. They kept coming out and saying, oh, look, there's a spike in Texas. There's a, yeah, it just happens to be around Houston, right? There's a spike in Texas. There's a spike. Everywhere there's a spike. There were these massive protests. Now, Jimenez, who is the highest-ranking official in Miami-Dade County, Florida, said on Sunday that the protests, quote, obviously contributed to the spread of the virus. But he noted, see, for us, it's a, you know, it's just a conspiracy theory. This guy says it's obvious. But he noted that there are several other factors at play, including socialization at beaches and the restaurants. You know, because he doesn't want to just, he doesn't want to go down the, you know, he doesn't want to go down that rabbit hole, right? So, quote, I think obviously the protests had a lot to do with it. We had, you know, thousands of young people together outside, a lot of them not wearing masks. And we know when you do that, you're talking and you're chanting and, you know, and spitting on people and shooting them and burning their cars. It really spreads the virus. You know, but at least he's coming out and saying it in the media. I mean, the Washington Examiner is not the mainstream media at this point. Maybe it should be. But, you know, that's just so typical. You know, that's so typical that, you know, they always come out with this stuff. You know, right after the fact. But, I mean, what are we facing right here? You know, there's an article in Town Hall headline that goes 6 weeks, 6 cities, 600 murders. You know, and it was Kevin McCullough there at Town Hall, and he noted that the single most important domestic issue of our time is not the rising number of new people testing positive for COVID-19. Deaths have hit all-time lows. The single most important domestic issue of our time is not even the continued economic hardship of a nation that was artificially shut down and sent spiraling into a false recession. Millions of jobs have been added over the past 60 days, and the skyrocketing unemployment has turned around to nearly where it was percent was in most of the Obama early years. You know, 11.5% versus 9.9%. Well, no, it's not that. But the single most important issue affecting some of the biggest swaths of population in America is the scandal the media ignores even as it explodes in our faces. In only 6 weeks, city after city operated by entrenched Democrats have seen a massive expansion of lawlessness, violence, murder. Stunningly, many news outlets seem gobsmacked and mystified at how or why such an explosion of lawlessness has occurred. Well, for the sake of brevity, McCullough put together this list, and I'm just going to read it real quick. New York. The Democrat mayor has long been understood as anti-police. His wife recently imagined that the city as nirvana if the NYPD were eliminated altogether. Thus far, in 2020, homicides are up in New York 21%. Shootings are up 46%. The Democrat mayor's agenda, including emptying the prisons known as Rikers Island, bail reform letting perps walk before the paperwork's completed, and the effort to defund the police that took 600 anti-crime units out of commission. Los Angeles. June saw disturbing trends, an increase in the month's first week by 250% in homicides and 250% in homicide and 56% increase in shootings. Following the death of George Floyd in May, the LAPD received a $150 million cut. Chicago. the famous Chicago. Don't we always go look at those stats at the end of every weekend out of Chicago? I mean, I already posted some that were piling up already, so we'll see tomorrow what the final numbers are. But Chicago, year-to-date shootings have eclipsed 1,508 for 2020, putting them 350 ahead of 2019. To date, homicides sit at 254, placing them ahead of 2019. Important to note that the Cook County Board voted in favor of defunding police. 11 city aldermen raced to the fore to demand that not a single penny of the $333 million in federal dollars not go to the police. And various proposals are being considered to cut current funding by more than $30 million in current spending. Washington, D.C. Oh, that's the home of the government, isn't it? Well, anyway, year-to-date, homicide numbers are 13% higher than this time a year ago. Nevertheless, the district PD is slated to be defunded by more than $15 million. Philadelphia. Shootings are up 67%. Victims are, of armed violence are up 29%. Homicides are up 25%. So, of course, it makes sense to defund the Philadelphia PD by $19 million. And Baltimore, consistently one of the most dangerous cities in America with a five-year streak of more than 300 murders, last year Baltimore set a new record of 348 homicides. Yet in 2020, they outpaced last year's record and will see defunding in the effect of $22 million. I mean, I feel like I'm living in one of Rod Serling's Twilight Zones. I mean, this is absolutely incredible. It's absolutely incredible. You have dozens shot and at least three killed on a violent 4th of July weekend in New York. The Post reported that nearly 40 people were shot across New York City from the 4th of July into early Sunday, including, this is happening now. This has not stopped. The media is not covering it like they were a little bit, but it hasn't stopped. The rioting, the fighting, throwing objects at police, burning things down, looting buildings. Now, between midnight Saturday and 6:30 a.m. Sunday, 39 people were struck by gunfire across every borough except Staten Island, with at least three people killed. Staten Island used to be controlled by the Republicans. Anyway, among the incidents, a man in his 20s was fatally shot in the chest near West 111th Street and Lenox Avenue in Harlem around 10 a.m. Saturday. 10 a.m., it's hard to believe they were even awake. Anyway, in Brooklyn, a 20-year-old man was shot in the chest at 12:43 a.m. on Sunday in East New York. And it just goes on and on. A 19-year-old girl allegedly beaten at a St. Louis Metrolink station while unarmed guards watched. A 19-year-old woman, she was beat up there. And not only did bystanders refuse to intervene during the attack, two unarmed security guards patrolling the area did nothing to help the situation. And that was reported by KTVI and in St. Louis. Now, the incident is under investigation by the Bi-State Development Agency. But an early conclusion from the investigation was that guards should have done more to help. Yeah, no kidding. But what's the point? You know, if they'd gone in and helped, what do you think would happen to them? You think they'd be arrested for assault? And here's some sad, really sad stories here. An 8-year-old girl, this reported by Gateway Pundit, an 8-year-old girl shot and killed by armed protesters blocking the street near Atlanta's Wendy's, where Rashard Brooks was killed. Now, in the 12 days since Rashard Brooks was killed, while attacking and fleeing the police at an Atlanta Wendy's on June 12th, armed protest mobs have taken to controlling access to the area, blocking streets enabled by a weak response by the police and city leaders. Saturday night, an 8-year-old girl was killed when the car she was riding in near the Wendy's was blocked by an armed protest mob that opened fire on the car. You know, and in this particular article, they never tell you if it's a white kid, a black kid, a Chinese. He doesn't even say. But police say the girl was a passenger in the car that got off the interstate. The car was headed down University Avenue and was stopped by armed protesters near the intersection of University and Prior Road. Now, at some point, police say the altercation broke out, and then came the gunfire. It's always an altercation. You got people that are driving down the street, and you got people blocking the road with weapons. And they still can't say it. They still can't say it. Another sad story, a 7-year-old girl shot dead in Chicago. And she was identified as Natalia Wallace, and we pray for her. We pray for her family. We pray for all these families. Now, a 7-year-old girl killed outside a July 4th party at her grandmother's Chicago home has been identified as Natalia Wallace. The youngster was playing with other children on the sidewalk in Chicago's Austin neighborhood around 7 p.m. Saturday when police said three men jumped out of a white car and opened fire at partygoers before speeding off because they had nothing else to do that night, right? We'd all be doing the same thing, right? Now, the girl was shot in the forehead and was later pronounced dead at Stronger Hospital, the outlet said. Quote, on a day when families should be celebrating, having a good time, spending time together, a 7-year-old girl was taken from a Chicago Police Department chief of opera. And these people must be frustrated because these communities don't seem to care. Okay, they're more into waiting around so they can loot, so they can burn, so they can do all this stuff. They're just waiting around in the midst of the peaceful protests, and it's outrageous. Seriously. And then there's a story of the Black Lives Matter activist felon arrested for allegedly extorting businesses. He was telling them to pay me or you'll have problems. And this is from Madison, Wisconsin. Pay up or you pay. That was essentially the message to business owners from Black Lives Matter activists. Devin Air Johnson, a vocal protester for the Black Lives Matter, was apparently staying in Wisconsin recently because, you know, they're all bussed in and taking part in the civil unrest. If this is not enough, Johnson allegedly began demanding local businesses provide he and his friends free food and services. In addition, he also demanded protection money to the owners if they refused to pay. Sounds like Al Sharpton, doesn't it? If they refused to pay, he threatened to break windows and damage their business. The FBI was called to investigate and charged him on Friday for extorting. And hopefully he's not getting out anytime soon. But you don't know. You just don't know. And it just goes on. It's absolutely horrible. You would think the Democrats are behind this whole thing. But I wanted to reach out to some of my fellow Jewish brethren, because you people that voted for Obama and you people that are marching with Black Lives Matter, you missed something. And a good friend of mine, Diane Biederman, wrote a blog today called Dear Jews, Too Many of You Don't Even Know What It Is You Are Not to Forget. And I'm going to read just a little bit from it. You can go check it out. It's the Biederman blog, Biederman blog. She's a great writer, really great writer. So she writes, just before he was beheaded, Daniel Pearl said, my mother is Jewish. My father is Jewish. I am a Jew. And I was out the other day, and I heard the most upsetting statement. The statement was, you don't vote for a political party just because of the way they treat Jews. Huh? Have we still not learned that it isn't good for the Jews, it isn't good for anyone? Perhaps we need to erect a statue to Pastor Martin Niemöller, who wrote, first they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out, because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out, because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out, because I was not a Jew. And then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. Now, we the Jews are the canary in the coal mine, and today the mine is filled with communists, Marxists, anarchists, socialists, fascists, and Jew haters from all walks of life, especially in the parties on the left. And in America, that is the Democrat Party and their allies, Black Lives Matter, with a side order of BDS and a pinch of Antifa. It's 2020, 75 years post-Shoah, the Holocaust, and two generations have grown up. The grandchildren of my generation, the baby boomers, are in school. We talk about never forget and never again. Our children and these grandchildren don't know what it is they are not to forget and what it is they are to remember. I watch in horror as Jews march with Black Lives Matter. The enemy of your enemy is not your friend. Have they taken the time to learn about BLM before standing with them? Black Lives Matter was founded in 2013 by three black women, Alicia Garza, Opal Tometi, and Patrice Cullors. Cullors declared that she and Garza are trained Marxists. Linda Sansour is an outspoken advocate in the Black Lives Matter movement. Black Lives Matter includes activists from the anti-Semitic Nation of Islam, the anti-Semitic Black Panthers, and Dreamcatchers. Melania Abdullah, the lead organizer of Black Lives Matter in L.A. and professor of Pan-African Studies at Cal State, is a supporter of Louis Farrakhan, the anti-Semitic leader of the Nation of Islam. Abdullah calls him the Honorable Mr. Farrakhan. Black Lives Matter, it appears, is structurally anti-Semitic. Now, Farrakhan says contemporary Jews are responsible for promoting child molestation, misogyny, police brutality, and sexual assault, among other social ills. In addition, he asserted that contemporary Judaism is nothing but a system of tricks and lies which Jews study in order to learn how to dominate non-Jews. His hate for Jews is all pervasive. The false Jew will lead you to filth and indecency. That's who runs the show business. That's who runs the record industry. That's who runs television. Farrakhan alleges that Jews often force aspiring actors to submit to anal sex. Do you know that many of us who go to Hollywood seeking a chance have to submit to anal sex and all kinds of debauchery? They give little part. He said it's called the casting couch. See, that's Jewish power. Now, the Black Lives Matter founding manifesto, published in 2016, that removed the BLM website, describes the United States as a corrupt democracy originally built on indigenous genocide and chattel slavery that continues to thrive on the brutal exploitation of people of color and that it perpetuates the ugly American traditions of patriarchy, classism, racism, and militarism. The platform accused Israel of committing genocide and referred to the Jewish state as an apartheid state. Furthermore, the platform also officially joined BLM with the anti-Semitic BDS campaign to boycott, divest, and sanction Israel. BDS campaign leader Omar Bagudi acknowledges that the goal of the BDS movement is to destroy Israel. Moreover, BDS campaigns on U.S. campuses are characterized by bigotry and discrimination directed against Jewish students. You know, and the Jews are still marching. And I thought Diane hit it on the head. The shock, the anger that I'm feeling. Like, you know, I can't help but talk to myself. I can't help it. Because I feel like I don't see the fight. I don't see the fight. You know, we've depended on our local police departments and our county sheriffs and our state troopers and sometimes the National Guard to be there. And they're not there. They're not out there fighting this fight, because it's going to lead to a real fight. And I don't know if people have it. But Selwyn Duke on American Thinker wrote the coming collapse of the Republic. And he said and he noted that we're just one election away from a full-blown socialism. This sentiment has become increasingly common lately, even notably among the previously apolitical. Yet something is overlooked. In keeping with President Reagan's observation, quote, freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. Being one election away from tyranny means that not enough people noticed and took action when we were one generation away, or two, or three, or perhaps overlooked, is that being one election away from tyranny now means we'll be one election away from the next election, whatever happens November 3rd. The point is that the politics being downstream from culture and really from morality, faith, and philosophy, this isn't merely a moment. It's not a fashion. It won't just pass, and we need to be prepared for things to come. But I have to add here, and you should go to American Thinker, check out Louise Feldman's article and Selwyn Duke's articles. The thing is that one of the reasons why we're sitting here right now in this mess is because of the election. The 2018 election. I was so utterly disgusted. I stopped broadcasting for almost 8 months. I couldn't even talk because we gave the House back to the progressives because some people decided they were going to declare themselves constitutional moralists or they were going to consider themselves never Trumpers and all this stuff, you know, because of his style or whatever. Okay. But losing that election, if the House had been in Republican hands, and I'm not saying all the Republicans are good because the rhinos suck. Half of them are bought off too. But we have to focus. We focused in 2016, and we did what we needed to do. We had the House. We had the Senate. We had the presidency. We blew it in 2018. Blew it. We can't blow it again. Because why? Because the goal has to be voting these progressives out, these progressive Democrat socialists, they have to be voted out. We have to find people to beat them and get them out first. We can fix other things later. But these people are in solidarity with this movement. They're in solidarity with the Marxist-Islamist movement. We see it all the time. We're seeing it in Michigan, in Chicago, in Illinois, in New York. We're seeing it where these mayors and these governors, California, where these mayors and these governors are in solidarity with this movement. And they have to be voted out. Or this attack on America is just never going to stop. It's never going to stop. Now, we have to be prepared and vocal and possibly physical before that time. But this is something we have to focus on this election, or a lot of things are going to happen like this. Virginia officials ordered the American flag removed from a construction site. Now this was reported on Breitbart. Amy Furr did the write-up, and it says, an American flag was removed from a construction site in Richmond, Virginia on Friday after officials claimed it was a potential target for protesters. Quote, over the past month, we've seen building and structures around Capitol Square vandalized and flags, dumpsters, and a bus. Why aren't they putting people there to stop the people that are going to come and attack the flag? It's not wrong to have the flag up there. This is like running away. This is running away. These are our governments. Not standing up, not bringing in more police, not bringing in the National Guard, not protecting the site and the flag. But they're running the other way. They're running the other way. And then we get this sick crap from the media. Okay? This NBC host basically labeled the 4th of July independence for white men. And he compared Trump voters, that's some of us, right, to colonizing slave owners. And the first thing I want to tell Tiffany Cross, because she's the moron that said this, she was filling in for Joy Reid, another half-brain Marxist sympathizer, that America fought against colonialism. We freed ourselves from the greatest colonial government and the most powerful colonial army in the world. We rejected colonialism, you morons, okay? But Sunday morning, Tiffany Cross, who was filling in, she said it. She said, and so here we are celebrating the birth of a nation, independence for white men, at a site described by one Native American activist as a symbol of white supremacy. Okay? Trump choosing Mount Rushmore and the 4th of July stop is just like when he chose Tulsa, the site of the 1921 massacre against black Americans by Democrats for his Juneteenth weekend rally. So why couldn't you have both? Why couldn't you celebrate Juneteenth at a Trump rally? I think that's ridiculous in itself. But these people are morons. They're lying morons. They are really playing games with people's lives. Okay? And now at football, because I don't know how many of you people are, but as far as NASCAR goes and the NFL and the NBA, I'm done. I'm hoping I get to watch a little minor league baseball, but they canceled that. So I'm going to be stuck with the pros, and they better not get caught up in this crap because they can't stand it. Now, this would be a really great thing to do and have done already. This is something we probably should have done already at different points. But this story, Jim Hoff has the story I'm using here just to read some of the notes here. Black National Anthem to be sung at NFL games this year was written by a black Republican who denounced Democrats for lynching blacks. So this would have been a great thing if we had come to this conclusion as a country, as sports fans. I don't have a problem with it. James Weldon Johnson, he was a Republican. He wrote Lift Every Voice. Him and his brother put it to music. He wrote a poem that just says, lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring. Ring with the harmonies of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise high as the listening skies. Let it resound loud as the rolling sea. Sing a song full of faith that the dark past has taught us. Sing a song of the hope that the present has brought us. Facing the rising sun of our new day begun, let us march on till victory is won. But he's talking as a Republican against the Democrat South. And he was an American civil rights activist. He was a school principal. He was a writer. And according to a grand old partisan in Hoffetz here in 1900, he wrote this poem to honor Republican activist Booker T. Washington when the civil rights leader visited his school. I mean, I guarantee if this guy's statue had been standing somewhere, they would have knocked it down. They would have defaced it. They don't even know what they're doing. But this is a hate on America. This has nothing to do, okay, with racial equality and equal justice under the law. This is insane. Now, the Dems seem to like this, the historical statues knocked down. But Sarah Carter had reported that CNN anchor Dana Bash asked Senator Tammy Duckworth, Democrat from Illinois, one of those great states where the death rate there is incredible. These people, Democrats should never be elected again in Illinois, ever. Just the number of families that have been impacted by the murders in Chicago alone. Now, she was asked if she believed that the statues of George Washington should come down. And she said, well, let me just say that we should start off by having a national dialogue on the same point. But, you know, it's just, you know, things just never ended. The cancel culture, you know, Sarah Carter noted that the cancel culture will never be satisfied until everything they know and find offensive is gone. I remember the Taliban blowing up the Buddhas of Bayamon statues they found offensive, or children's suicide camps in the FATA where they wouldn't allow depictions of people's faces while they spewed lies. What about book burnings in Germany during World War II? Should the pyramids be blown apart because they were built by slaves? Should we dismantle all societies because every single one has committed some offense or atrocity? When does this crap end? And when does it end? You know, but based on the speeches that Trump gave yesterday, I'm getting the feeling that we're going to have to end it. We the people are going to have to end this, and we're going to have to pick our spots. Because the Washington Beacon, Free Beacon reported, Soros is set to double his 2016 spending. He's pouring $40 million into a super PAC right now. And Joe Shostal noted that liberal billionaire George Soros is on pace to double his 2016 spending output as he works to oust President Donald Trump. See, they're not offering anything. You know, that's the funny thing. No one's voting for Joe Biden. They're supporting Joe Biden right now to have somebody there. That's all. They're not voting for a platform. They're not voting for anything. They don't have a platform. They should, instead of coming out, all they ever do is come out and complain about Republicans, complain about Trump, complain. They had 8 years of Superman Obama in there. They got nothing done for poor people. They got nothing done for veterans. They got nothing done. Okay? And now they've spent the last 3.5 years just attacking this president to win this election. That's why it's so critical that Trump needs to be reelected. And we need to take back the damn House and get the strings, the purse strings back for what's going on. Because we blew it in 2018, and we've got to fix it now. And all you constitutional moralists and never-Trumpers and rhinos and the rest of you, better wake the hell up. Because this could very well be our last chance to stop this explosion of Marxism. Because, you know, Hillary was going to be the next one, and it was going to get worse. She would have gotten 8 years. It would have gotten worse and worse and worse. They would have implemented more and more of this socialism. And that would have been the soft, you know, the soft tyranny, and it wouldn't have hit us as hard. Now we have a chance. We have a chance to fix it, and we better fix it now, regardless of Soros money. And I'm not telling everybody to go out there and go to Donald Trump and, you know, 88202 and go give money to the campaign. But we've got to be realistic about this. We cannot continue to sit on the sidelines anymore. Because no one's going to stand up for our country. No one's going to stand up for our country the way we will, the way we need to, right at this point. Because never Trump Republicans are plotting to give Democrats the Senate majority. And from a Breitbart article by Sean Moran, It says, Never Trump Super PAC, the Lincoln Project, and another anti-Trump Republicans continue to plot to not only take down President Donald Trump, but also the Senate Republican majority, according to a report. This is suicide. This was released on Saturday. Now, Never Trump Republicans believe that preventing a second term for Trump is insufficient, and that the Senate Republicans must also... Now, doesn't it sound like the Marxists are paying for this? Come on. Now, Steve Schmidt, who works for the Never Trump Lincoln Project, said, the analogy would be this: be in the same way that the fire purifies the forest. It needs to be burned to the ground. Oh, my God. This is the guy in charge of the Lincoln Project talking about things being burnt to the ground. Do you think somebody will take him literally? Anyway, and fundamentally repudiated, every one of them should be voted out of office with the exception of Mitt Romney. Oh, to wage their war on the Republican Party, the Lincoln Project announces six-figure buys against Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Senators Joni Ernst, Republican in Iowa, and Tom Tillis, Republican in North Carolina, and Martha McSally, Republican in Arizona. People, we have got to come out and vote as a bloc. We can't let this intimidation and this foreign socialist money and all this other crap have an impact. We just can't. There's just too much at stake right now. They're burning the flag. They're knocking down our monuments. Now, I'm not saying run out there and try to confront the horde and the mobs, but we have to start speaking out at home with our families, with people. You know, not everybody is going to get out here and babble on the internet, but we have to. We have got to get ready for this election. November 3rd is a critical turning point. I pray that we make it there without a lot more violence, without a lot more threats, without people being killed. I hope that the murder rates start to come down. I hope that the police are reinstated. You know, and especially the special crime units, like the one that de Blasio just disbanded out of hand. Why would you do something foolish like that in a city like New York? Do you know how hard it was? Do you know how much work Rudy Giuliani had to do to straighten up New York? And I lived in New York and worked in New York during that period of time. And I know the difference. You know, worrying about the gangs coming around, worrying about the potential violence, running from one spot to another, making sure you had everything covered, to a city that was, it certainly wasn't peaceful. It certainly wasn't always the safest, but there were safe areas. And you didn't have that constant threat of being attacked, because they were doing stop and frisks. There were a lot of police on the streets. And stop and frisk definitely got a lot of guns out of the hands of people that use guns illegally, not legal gun owners, not people that respect the Second Amendment, not NRA members or USCCA members, or not any of those members. But these are people, these are criminals. These guys are going to do robberies. They're going to steal stuff. They're going to shoot people. And so stop and frisk made sense. Stop and frisk saved probably hundreds of thousands, maybe tens or hundreds of thousands, okay, of low income and minority lives while it was being implemented. You know, the people that you never hear about, the people in the community that aren't whining and crying, the people that are trying to get through on whatever it is they have, their job, their minimum wage, people that are actually working to have a life, to have a family. You know, not these criminals that aren't working, that aren't trying to have a family, that at least not be part of a family they may have created. And it's not just any one race or any one group or any one of anything anywhere. You know, there's good and bad in everything, okay? Good and bad of everything. We have to get this brainwashing, this Marxist, Islamist brainwashing out of our head, that everything is the same, everybody's the same. And we the people need to stand up again. We have to be ready on November 3rd to vote as a bloc. We have to. Our country depends on it. Our children and grandchildren depend on it. We have to do it. You've been listening to Brian Irving here at Feldman Rural Review, thanking you for tuning in. And just remember, when the going gets tough, the tough keep the faith.
That's your world. I just live in it.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Hey, I want to thank you for listening to the July 5th, 2020 podcast of Feldman World Review. This is Brian Irvin, your host here. Thanking you for tuning in. Appreciate the support. I want to just thank you for tuning in. Just remember, like I always say, when the going gets tough, the tough keep the faith.